Dr. Watson, Mr. Sherlock Holmes, said Stanford, introducing us. How are you? He asked. You have been in Afghanistan, I perceive. With those words found in Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's A Study in Scarlet, Dr. John Watson is introduced to a most extraordinary man, and the love affair of the reading public with Sherlock Holmes begins. Though Holmes is blessed with a superior intelligence that most of us could only dream of, he has very specifically trained it and himself to be a fine-tuned crime-fighting machine. He has put detection and forensic science in his brain above all other things, even a basic understanding of Copernicus and Galileo. What exactly is the lore that has kept Holmes and Watson in the public imagination for so long? I believe it is this. Holmes inspires us to believe that we could be as brilliant as he is, and in so doing, hold sway over our neighbors. How incredible is it that upon meeting, he can tell that you are a left-handed amateur archaeologist with a recently published pamphlet, or that you just took the train from Brighton and wrote a long letter on the train. It certainly establishes the upper hand. But it is also refreshing that Holmes' power over the rest of us comes not from beauty or from physical prowess, but from his mind. And that though he surpasses the rest of us, he is the first to admit that he has dedicated his life to improving his mind and training his intellect. The message is clear. This is something the rest of us can aspire to. That, I think, is the real appeal of Sherlock Holmes. His powers are great, but they are attainable. Indeed, each of us secretly believes that we are the smartest person in the room. However, few of us seem prepared to work that hard on improving our minds. With an age of smart electronic gadgets, we have only become more mentally crippled than ever before. The mental discipline of a mind like Sherlock Holmes has lost its panache when you have Siri in your pocket. But what if we aspired to turn off the devices and train our own powers of reasoning and deduction to a greater degree? Several times a week, someone asks me if I have read all the books in my bookstore, or, I bet you read a lot, don't you? My answer is always the same. I read about a book a day. This invariably is met with surprise and guffaws. It's just like any other muscle, I point out. The more you strengthen it, the better it works. I cannot, for example, run a mile at all, and certainly not in 8 minutes or less. Reading is the muscle that I choose to strengthen, but it is just not so unimaginable to me to read a book a day. Well, how long a book, people like to ask. And then this tends to lead to a discussion about not confusing quantity and quality. Elie Wiesel's Night is only 120 pages, but each sentence is carefully chosen and loaded with meaning and information. If given due attention, it can take longer to read and absorb than, say, Ayn Rand's The Fountainhead, which at 720 pages is 6 times as long and a fraction of the depth. Don't be fooled by the outer trappings. What is inside and what does it show us about the human experience? Analysis and insight are part of what art and literature seek to teach us. Rather than glorifying the beautiful people or muscle-bound street fighters or even worse, worshiping at the temple of immediate factoids in our pockets, perhaps revisiting Mr. Sherlock Holmes and his methods of deduction and analysis might serve us better.